7 World Central Kitchen aid workers killed by Israeli airstrike in Gaza.
We were outraged to learn of an IDF strike that killed a number of civilian humanitarian workers yesterday from the World Central Kitchen, which has been relentless in working to get food to those who are hungry in Gaza.
An earthquake hits near Taiwan, tsunami warnings in Japan. And Thailand could become the first Southeastern Asian nation to have same-sex marriage.
It feels like we've been given the best gift of our lives, as we've been fighting for this for over 12 years.
Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope. White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby says the U.S. was outraged over the Israeli strike that killed 7 workers with a Washington-based charity, and he called on Israel to do more to ensure civilians and humanitarian aid workers are protected. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
The World Central Kitchen Aid Group, which feeds people suffering due to natural disasters and wars, says it has suspended operations in Gaza after an Israeli airstrike hit its convoy as it was leaving a warehouse loaded with food. A U.S. official confirmed a dual U.S.-Canadian citizen was among the 7 killed. The armored cars carrying food were clearly branded with the WCK logo. White House National Security spokesman John Kirby had this reaction during Tuesday's press briefing.
We were outraged to learn of an IDF strike that killed a number of civilian humanitarian workers yesterday from the World Central Kitchen, which has been relentless in working to get food to those who are hungry in Gaza and, quite frankly, around the world.
World Central Kitchen is run by celebrity chef Jose Andres. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said President Joe Biden reached out to Andres.
The president conveyed he is grieving with the entire World Central Kitchen family. The president felt it was important to recognize the tremendous contribution World Central Kitchen has made to the people in Gaza and people around the world. The president conveyed he will make clear to Israel that humanitarian aid workers must be protected.
Standing with his French counterpart on a visit to Paris, Secretary of State Antony Blinken called the aid workers heroes who must be protected.
We've spoken directly to the Israeli government about this particular incident. We've urged a swift, a thorough, an impartial investigation to understand exactly what happened.
French Foreign Minister Stéphane Séjourné was more direct in condemning the Israeli strike.
Allow me first of all to express our strong condemnation of the Israeli strike that led to the deaths of 7 humanitarian workers from the NGO World Central Kitchen. Protecting humanitarian workers is a moral and legal imperative that everyone must adhere to.
Israel's military on Tuesday expressed sincere sorrow over the airstrike and said officials are reviewing the incident at the highest levels. Relief experts say Palestinian children and families are on the brink of starvation, and this attack will only make things worse. The war between Israel and Hamas began last October 7th, when Hamas militants stormed into southern Israel, killing some 1,200 people. Israel has responded with a 6-month-old offensive, killing some 33,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's health ministry. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Let's go deeper. VOA's Lori London spoke with Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem about this.
What else can you tell us that we may not have heard about, or what are you hearing?
The Haaretz newspaper said it was 3 missiles fired at the cars, which were clearly marked as coming from World Central Kitchen. And after the first missile hit, some of the people in that car were injured, got into the second car, and then the second car was hit just after that. And several ships that were on their way to Gaza with aid have now turned around.
Could this Israel's global image, could it worsen its global image?
Sure. Look, I mean, Israel's global image is already pretty bad, to be quite honest. And there is, I think Israelis are somewhat frustrated because they say that they didn't start this war. You know, it was on October 6th, there was no war. And October 7th, you know, thousands of Hamas gunmen came into Israel, you know, murdered hundreds, 1,200 people, many of them civilians, raped women. I mean, there are more and more things coming out about also the sexual attacks on women and the hostages who were being held. Israel feels that what it did was a response to an aggression by Hamas. And they feel that the world has kind of forgotten that. And that in the past 6 months, because of the humanitarian situation and the large number of civilian casualties, Israel is kind of getting blamed for something that it didn't start. At the same time, the opinion that Israel most cares about is that of the United States. And, President Biden has stood by Israel. Just yesterday, it was announced that they're going through with a multi-billion-dollar sale of F-15 fighter jets to Israel. So I think that even though there certainly are disagreements, and what this might do is stop Israel from proceeding with the last, what it says is the last phase of this operation, and going into the southern city of Rafah, where there are still 4 Hamas battalions. The problem is that Netanyahu has been unwilling to discuss any kind of future for what happens after the war ends. And that's where there's also disagreements between the U.S. and Israel. But I think as long as the U.S. continues to support Israel and keeps whatever criticism it has, quiet or private, I think that Israel sort of feels that it doesn't really care what the rest of the world says.
Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem, talking with VOA's Lori London.
On Monday in Damascus, the Iranian consulate was hit by an airstrike. At a UN Security Council meeting, the U.S. denied any prior knowledge of the strike and warned Iran not to resume attacks on U.S. forces. Here is U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Robert Wood.
We will not hesitate to defend our personnel and repeat our prior warnings to Iran and its proxies not to take advantage of the situation. Again, an attack in which we had no involvement or advanced knowledge to resume their attacks on U.S. personnel.
The airstrike in Damascus was the biggest blow to Iran's top military force, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, since the U.S. assassinated the head of its elite Quds force, Qasem Soleimani, in January 2020. Michael Lippin spoke with retired Israeli Major General Yaakov Amador, former National Security Advisor to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
When you consider that the Iranian Supreme Leader Khamenei talked about punishing the Zionist regime with our brave men, what do you think he means by that?
I don't know, because the Iranians are using Hezbollah in the north, the Houthis in the south, the Shiite militias from Iraq, launching rocket missiles, cruise missiles into Israel all the time in the last 6 months. Iranians were those which built the capabilities of Hamas. The money in Hamas is in Iranian money. The weapon systems are Iranian weapon systems. And Hamas attacked Israel on the 7th of October, as you remember. So I don't know what more can Iran do, because the Iranians are attacking Israel in the last 6 months from all over the Middle East, from Lebanon in the north to Yemen in the south, from Iraq in the east, and within Israel, they try to smuggle in weapon systems and materials to kill Israelis into the West Bank. And we exposed it last week.
Well, speaking of the Iranians, it is a very significant blow that they just suffered to the IRGC, with several of its most senior commanders being killed in the strike on that building in Damascus. What impact do you think this is going to have on the IRGC's ability to keep functioning?
I think that for the very close range, it will make the capabilities much less than before. For the long range, after 2 or 3 years, it very much depends who will be those who will take the responsibility. For example, the Iranians didn't find up till now a substitute, a good substitute, someone who can enter to the shoes of Qasem Soleimani. Is it the same case? I'm not sure at all.
That was Major General Yaakov Amadror speaking with VOA's Michael Lippin.
We're following these other stories from around the world. An earthquake offshore Taiwan with a magnitude of 7.2 rocked the capital Taipei on Wednesday morning, knocking out power in several parts of the city and sparking a tsunami warning for the islands of southern Japan and the Philippines. Taiwan television stations showed footage of some collapsed buildings.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Tuesday that his country was answering Russian strikes with longer-range responses after a Ukrainian drone attack on an oil refinery 1,300 kilometers from its own borders. In his nightly video address, Zelensky did not refer directly to the attack on the Russian region of Tatarstan, but said such responses were just as important as helping Ukrainians who were suffering from enemy attacks.
North Korea said on Wednesday it successfully test-fired a new mid-to-long-range solid-fuel hypersonic missile. North Korea fired a suspected intermediate-range ballistic missile into the sea on Tuesday in a possible test of a new rocket using solid fuel, drawing swift condemnation from South Korea, Japan, and the United States.
Crime in the United States is one of the leading issues on voters' minds in this year's presidential election. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how Joe Biden and Donald Trump are addressing those concerns in their campaigns.
Crime was among the issues motivating primary voters Tuesday in New York, where Joe Biden and Donald Trump were on their party's ballots, despite already securing their presumptive nominations for president. New Yorker Golda Lee, who asked that we not show her face on camera, says she feels less safe.
I just have a sense that there's just an energy and an activity that wasn't there before, both with people who might commit crimes and people who might be afraid of those who do.
Voter Amy Pelletieri says concerns about crime make her more careful about where she goes.
I feel very safe riding the subways. I know crime is up, and I've seen it on the news. I haven't personally witnessed it myself, so I know it's there, but I feel like if I'm safe and responsible and know to avoid certain situations that could be scary for me, I'll be okay.
In this election, Trump is campaigning as a law and order candidate, vowing to strengthen local police. He was in New York last week at the wake for an officer killed during a traffic stop.
We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently because this is not working. This is happening too often.
A Harvard Caps Harris poll last month showed U.S. voters see crime and drugs as among the top issues facing the country, more important than health care, terrorism, and climate change. Even though the latest FBI data shows that violent crime in the United States dropped last year across the country in both large cities and small. Biden points to those declining crime numbers as evidence of his administration's success with law enforcement. His campaign is pushing back against Trump's attacks over crime by linking him to the January 6, 2021 attacks on the U.S. Capitol that disrupted Congress's certifying the presidential election, a race that Trump lost. A Biden campaign event included law enforcement officers who were at the Capitol that day.
You don't have to wonder what would happen to our democracy and our Constitution if Trump is elected again. He's telling us, he has shown us, and on January 6th, will look like a rehearsal if we can we cannot depend on Trump Republicans to defend the Constitution, since they also have sided against law and order and the rule of law.
The Biden campaign says Trump's law and order claims are undermined by his multiple felony indictments. Trump says those charges are election interference for from a weaponized judiciary. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Also relative to the upcoming U.S. presidential election, U.S. President Joe Biden used a Tuesday phone call with Chinese President Xi Jinping to nail down previous Chinese assurances that they would not use their considerable web-based disinformation tools to interfere with the U.S. presidential election. The two leaders also discussed Taiwan as it prepares to inaugurate a new leader next month. Here's VOA's Anita Powell in Washington.
The White House described Tuesday's phone call between President Joe Biden and Chinese leader Xi Jinping, which follows their in-person meeting last year, as candid and constructive. This time, the two covered a range of issues they had previously discussed in November, including joint counter-narcotics efforts, military communication, and the risks of artificial intelligence.
We believe that there is no substitute for regular communication at the leader level to effectively manage this complex and often tense bilateral relationship. And both presidents agreed to pick up the phone and speak when needed.
Xi, in a statement, said both leaders found the phone call to be candid and constructive. But he stressed that disagreements remain, notably about the status of Taiwan, which China claims. In his statement, Xi said the China-U.S. relationship is beginning to stabilize, and this is welcomed by both societies and the international community. On the other hand, the negative factors of the relationship have also been growing, and this requires attention from both sides. The White House said Biden reiterated, but did not advance, previous concerns about Chinese interference in the upcoming U.S. election. Xi did not mention the topic in his account of the call.
I would just say that we've been clear consistently, even going back to the November meeting in California, about our concerns over our own election security and efforts by certain actors, including some from the PRC, to affect that.
Just last month, the British Parliament voted to impose sanctions over Beijing-linked hacks of its Electoral Commission and Parliament. U.S. intelligence officials have also warned lawmakers that Chinese hackers are preparing to wreak havoc and cause real-world harm to the U.S. China's government last month showcased how it uses digital tools to bolster, not hamper, democracy. But analysts point to a state-sponsored Chinese influence campaign known as Spamouflage that does the opposite and encourage Biden to push back.
There needs to be a very clear and some consistent communication about election interference. And I don't just mean hacking into voting systems, which in itself is obviously one of the most heavy-handed forms of election interference, but even the ones that involve manipulating public opinion in deceptive ways, or even just trying to discourage people from voting, which we have seen from operations that have been linked to China in the past.
The White House did not say when the two leaders would next speak, but Xi, in his statement, said he welcomed this week's visit to China by U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with France's Minister of Defense at Paris's Nexter Defense Systems hangar, where they were shown military equipment and ammunition that France has been sending to Ukraine. Blinken highlighted the quantity of resources that France and Europe have given to Ukraine as it continues to defend itself against Russia. He added, however, that Ukraine is at a critical moment.
We are at a critical moment where it is absolutely essential to get Ukrainians what they continue to need to defend themselves, particularly when it comes to munitions and air defenses.
Blinken also used the opportunity to call on the U.S. Congress to pass a supplementary budget request that would allow the U.S. to send more resources to Ukraine.
There's a near-term challenge that we're working together to meet. It's another reason why the supplementary budget request that President Biden has made to Congress must be fulfilled as quickly as possible.
Bassirou Diomaye Faye was sworn in Tuesday as Senegal's president. Faye won with more than 54% of the vote. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo attended the ceremony in the capital, Dakar, and has this story.
Bassirou Diomaye Faye was sworn in Tuesday as Senegal's fifth president at the CICAD, the International Conference Center named after the country's second president, located in Djamnyadjo, about an hour from Dakar's city center.
Devant Dieu,
The new president said, "Before God and the Senegalese nation, I swear that I will fulfill the office of President of the Republic of Senegal faithfully, that I will thoroughly observe and ensure the observance of the provisions of the Constitution and the laws." Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Thai LGBTQ plus activists celebrated another victory after the marriage equality bill overwhelmingly passed the upper house's first reading on Tuesday, a significant move that will bring the country closer to becoming the third territory in Asia and the first in Southeast Asia to legalize same-sex unions. Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan has more.
It's a key step on the path to becoming the third Asian territory to legalize same-sex unions. Wa'ar Dao Chamaporn watched the bill sail through with 147 votes to 4.
It feels like we've been given the best gift of our lives. As we've been fighting for this for over 12 years, I've been imagining all along what this victory would be like. How significant would this gift be? Obviously, it's not just important to the activists sitting in this room, but it means something to all the LGBT people in Thailand who might still be in hiding.
If successful in second and third readings due in July, the bill will be sent to the Royal Palace for the King's assent before becoming law within 120 days. LGBT activist Siddhartha Ninlapruek says this win makes the work worth it.
Everybody knows that the Senate is like a stone wall made of steel, which holds the strongest power in our societal structure. This is a progressive law, so we were closely rooting for it, and once it passes, I'm very happy because all the work that we've done, all the fight that we've put up over the past decade, finally, we see that the needle has moved closer towards our goal.
96% of the lower house passed the bill in a landmark move in March.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, with Scott Walterman, I'm Alexis Strope.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The multifaceted threats posed by Iran and its terrorist proxies are among the most pressing challenges we face to international peace and security, U.S. Ambassador at Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism Elizabeth Richards said in congressional testimony.
For decades, Iran's own Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Force, has engaged in assassination attempts, terrorist plots, and other violence targeting U.S. personnel and interests.
In the past few years, said Ambassador Richard, these threats have grown, even to include a disrupted plot targeting a former U.S. national security advisor.
Iran also continues to support a range of terrorist groups who pose a threat to the U.S. homeland and to U.S. personnel and facilities in the Middle East and beyond. Hamas's terrorist attack on Israel on October 7th was a sobering reminder of the enduring threat of terrorism enabled by Iran. Hamas would not have been able to carry out its horrific attack without Iran's longtime assistance, funding, and training.
Ambassador Richards said to counter Iran's threats, the United States focuses on four key factors.
First, we counter Iran by strengthening our network of partnerships and alliances so that we all present a united front against Iran's aggressive actions. Particularly over this past several years, we've succeeded in convincing other governments to sanction, ban, or otherwise limit the ability of Hamas and Hezbollah particularly to access funding and move people and materiel. Second, we use a variety of sanctions to constrain Iran's own finances and support networks. For example, the Biden administration recently sanctioned individuals who were part of a criminal network directed by Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and Security that attempted to assassinate U.S.-based opponents of the Iranian regime.
Third, said Ambassador Richard, the United States helps build the counterterrorism capabilities of our allies and partners.
We've provided new technologies and training to improve their border security and have expanded our information sharing and global watch listing. And fourth, we expose and counter Iranian disinformation campaigns aimed at undermining the United States and inspiring attacks against us and our personnel and installations around the world.
These and other efforts help us identify and neutralize the terrorist threats before they reach our borders, said Ambassador Richard. Because of what's at stake, she declared, our counter-Iran efforts will endure as long as this threat endures.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.